to episode 7 of Trail Talk SA. Good day from myself, Brad Brown. Thank you for downloading and listening to this weekly podcast. It focuses specifically on the South African trail running scene. Another busy show lined up for you this week. And before we get into who's on the show, I just want to say a big thank you to everybody who sent tweets and emails about last week's show with Ryan Sands, where Ryan spoke to us about how he deals with failure after his forced withdrawal from the Leadville 100 miler. It's just amazing to hear someone like Ryan Sands, who's experienced victory so often and not necessarily defeat or failure, just talk honestly about how he bounces back from a setback like those back spasms that forced him out of the Leadville 100 miler. So yeah, keep those comments coming through. You can email them to podcast@trailtalksa. You can also tweet us @trailtalksa, or if you're on Facebook, be sure to like our Facebook page. We post a whole bunch of stuff up there, some cool photos, some cool motivation as well. It is Trail Talk SA on Facebook. Just search for us there. Coming up in this week's show, very, very excited to have the winner of the 2013 Atacama Crossing, Daniel Rowlands, on the show. Zimbabwean born, went to varsity in Cape Town, but is now living in Santiago, Chile. And we had Daniel on the show, just spoke a little bit about running, trail running in South America, some of his goals and hopes and aspirations. He's also heading back to South Africa in about a month's time, actually, to come and run a race here. And it'll be interesting to see how he does. We chat a little bit about that on the show this week as well. And then also, another race that's coming up in a couple of weeks' time is the Rhino Run. If you don't know anything about it, it started in Port Elizabeth. It's the second year that it's run, but they have races around the country. There's 7 of them happening this year, and I've got the founder of the Rhino Run on the show this week, Sean O'Keefe. Just really passionate about stopping rhino poaching, and very cool interview as well. That's coming up. Tell you exactly how you can get involved. And also, if you're listening anywhere around the planet, how you can start your own rhino run as well. And then we're talking injuries on today's show too, with physiotherapist Chris Allen. And Chris and I just touch on some of the injuries that trail runners are experiencing in his practice at the moment in particular, and how to avoid them, how to strengthen up, and perhaps not get them in the first place. So that's all coming up on this episode of Trail Talk SA. Let's get straight into it. Well, one thing I love about what I'm doing with these podcasts is technology allows you to literally just travel around the world. And I got an email from someone, actually, funnily enough, been getting a few tweets from him saying he's been listening to the podcast in South America, and got an email and just really fascinated by what he's doing in South America. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show Daniel Rowlands. Welcome onto Tri Talk SA. Thanks for your time today. You're in South America, in Chile. Where about in Chile are you at the moment?
I live in Santiago, Brad. It's the capital, right in the middle of the country. Chile's a very long country, and Santiago's right in the middle on the base of the Andes Mountains.
Okay, Daniel, I mean, you're in Santiago, but you Zimbabwean born. You grew up in Zim. You went to varsity in Cape Town. How on earth did you end up in Santiago in Chile?
It was quite a long process, but basically I moved here as part of a training program for my job. I was working for a mining company, and the very cool thing about that is that I got to move to different locations where the mines and projects were. So I started off in South Africa working on iron ore in the head office there in Pretoria, and then I very fortunately got to spend a year in Alaska on a copper project, and then I was moved to the copper head office, which is in Santiago in Chile.
Okay, so that's the 1 minute abridged version. But Daniel, you're pretty athletic, and we're going to get into some of the stuff you're doing at the moment. Were you always athletic growing up? You mentioned to me that you decided you wanted to try your hand at triathlon after school, and what happened on that journey?
Yeah, I've been doing triathlon and then running for many years now. I started when I was at school. My brother and father are very keen athletes too, and we would always spend the weekends doing local triathlons. And slowly throughout my school career, I got better at that. I was a Zimbabwe national junior champion at triathlon, and I did some of the All-Africa triathlon championships in South Africa and Mauritius and Namibia as a junior. So I decided after school to have a go and see how good I could be at that, and I went over to the UK to train with the British squad in Loughborough. The British triathlon squad where I was training with had just an excellent program where they helped the athletes financially. They gave them the support that they needed, bicycle mechanics, coaches, nutrition advice, and I didn't have access to all of that because I'm not British, and I didn't know if I would be able to find that support on my own. Perhaps I was a little bit too young or not mature enough to start looking and thinking about being a better athlete, but that didn't exist for me at the time. So I decided to go back and study and to go into a different field.
Okay, and that's how you ended up back in Cape Town. You studied, and from there, you've pretty much given your background, how you ended up in Santiago in Chile. But I'm presuming that throughout your student years and through this traveling to Alaska and now in Chile, you trained throughout that. I mean, you may not be racing sort of triathlon, but you were running all throughout that, I'm sure.
Yep, all throughout that time. A lot of trail runs in Cape Town and some more shorter road races in Joburg, because that's what's easier to access for me when I was there. But things really picked up for me when I was in Alaska. I met some fantastic trail runners, and the city where I was living in Anchorage in Alaska is on the base of the Chugach Mountains, but everything is very accessible from there. I was 5 minutes from a trailhead, and I could easily go out and run for hours and hours on the trails just right from my home. And that's how I really got into trail racing. The runners there love really extreme races. They took me over a Crow Pass crossing, which is a marathon long race without any support, without any marking. They just sort of drag a line in the sand for the start, and then you run to the end, which is where the bears are. It was just a fantastic introduction to trail races. And that's where I started doing ultra races as well. I did my first ultra marathon of 100 miles in Alaska, which I did in winter, and was just a completely different experience. And that's what got me into doing longer distance trail races.
Okay, and then let's talk about in Chile. Earlier this year, you took part in the Atacama Crossing, which you ended up doing phenomenally well in. Tell us a little bit about that race. That was in March this year, right?
Yep, that's correct. I did the Atacama Crossing last year for the first time. And I think, like most people going into their first multi-stage race in the desert, I was a little bit underprepared, not quite sure what to expect. And I had a good race. I came ninth overall, and it was tough. It was a challenge, and I really enjoyed it. But I knew that I had a lot of potential to do better, and I saw lots of things that I could improve on. And that's when I started thinking about taking some time off and just training specifically for some races to see how well I could do at them. And before the Atacama Crossing in March this year, I had 6 months where I did some really good training. I went up to the desert to practice in the conditions and to work on my gear. And when I got to the start line, I was ready to race and in good condition. I had a really good race, although it was very close. Over the first four stages, there was less than a minute separating the first two of us at the front of the field. And then on the long day is when I did really well, which I think is perhaps some of that longer running that I'd done in Alaska came into play, and it helped me with the endurance and to get a bit of a lead. And in the end, I did win the race, which was just an amazing experience.
I'm sure, and it's just so funny. I mean, I chatted to AJ Collitz on the show a few weeks ago, and he was saying as well how he also, funnily enough, came from a triathlon background and discovered trail, not late in his career, but a little bit down the line, and found something that he was really good at, that he might not have been able to compete at the top level triathlon-wise, but here all of a sudden he found a sport where he could find races that maybe played into his hands. So not all trail runs would play into his hands, but he could find ones that would suit his strength, and he could go after those and do really well in them. Do you feel the same sort of way about your racing and your career?
Yep, I feel exactly the same way. I think the trail racing is fantastic because it's so diverse, and there are so many different facets to the racing and the different environments that you're going to compete in. So I think that I have a really good opportunity where I can spend time preparing and being very specific in the work that I do, and that is very useful and helpful when it comes to stage racing. I might not have the speed to do a very short 50K trail race, but over 7 days when I've had the time to prepare and do blocks of work, that specificity that I can work on now means that I can compete at multi-stage races.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I love about the sport as well, is that there's just something for everyone that you can. You can play to your strengths. If you're into vertical climbing, you can find a race where there's tons of vertical climbing. If you're into really technical stuff, you can find a race where there's some really technical stuff. And Daniel, talk me through life in Santiago at the moment. Like, for you, with regards to training, I mean, what's the reason why you're still there? I mean, Cape Town, let me put it out there. Cape Town's got some amazing, amazing trails and diversity. Guys like AJ Collett swear by it. Ryan Sands, who I spoke to last week on the show, also just loves training in Cape Town and reckons some of the best sort of trails that he's ever run is in the Western Cape. What's keeping you in Santiago as far as life and training?
Well, life has kept me here in part because this is where I finished up with my last training role at work. And also I'm here with my girlfriend, who has an excellent job that she's doing very well at. And we're not ready to move for her just yet. So part of the reason that I'm staying is other factors other than running. But on the running side, we're right on the base of the Andes here, and there's just excellent trails to quickly get into straight from the city. Lots of climbing, lots of rocky technical trails, and then as I go closer to the coast, there's a lot of sandy desert-type conditions that I can train in. And finally, the Atacama Desert is just a two-hour flight away, and if I want to do a specific training block, I can go up there and work in the sand and the heat and the altitude. So those factors keep me here, and so far it's been quite advantageous, I think.
I'm sure. How big is the trail running scene in Santiago?
It's growing quite quickly. It's a smaller sport, I think, like in most countries, but very quickly the sport is developing. We have a North Face Endurance race here every year, which is part of the North Face Endurance series. And next year, there's a few 100-mile races planned, some in the desert in the Atacama and some further down in the south, which is just an absolutely beautiful area. And slowly, with more bigger, well-supported races, there's starting to be a lot more athletes racing here. So it's growing, but it's still quite a small scene.
Okay. And as far as ambitions for you, I mean, you've won the Atacama Crossing now. What's next on the cards for you? Are there other races, I mean, those desert races that are around the world, are those the sort of things that you've got an eye on?
Yep, exactly that, Brad. At the moment, I'm focusing on the Kalahari or Grabis Extreme Marathon, which is in October, which is near Upington. So I'll be traveling back to South Africa for that. And I'm really looking forward to it. It sounds like an excellent race, and the community has just been so welcoming and sending me good advice about the terrain and conditions. So I'm looking forward to that. That's my next focus. And coincidentally, my brother and dad will also be running in that race. So it will be a very good family time as well, I hope. And then after that, I would like to do the Sahara race in February next year, which is part of the Racing the Planet series. And the race is actually going to be held in Jordan instead of Egypt this time because of some of the conflict that's going on in Egypt. So for the next 6 months or so, that's what I have planned, another two multi-stage desert races.
Okay, and then Daniel, you mentioned the time you spent in Alaska and that 100-miler that you did in the snow in the winter. I mean, these desert races, we chatted to Dave Balaise not so long ago who completed the Racing the Planet in Iceland. Are the cold desert races on your radar as well, or do you sort of thrive better in the heat?
No, I think I'm much better in the heat. I did that race in Alaska, and the truth is, before I got to Alaska, I'd never even seen snow. When I was there, the race was in minus 20 degrees, and we had to pull a sled to carry all our gear, and it was more of an adventure than a race for me. I came fourth overall, but the people in front of me were really running hard and racing, and I was just mostly trying to survive those very tough conditions. I think the heat definitely favors me, and I think I'm going to stick with that for the time being.
trying to survive and keep your hands and nose warm, I think.
Yeah, it was freezing and tough, but enjoyable. A very beautiful place in the world to travel through.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'll take the heat any day over the cold, without a doubt. But yeah, it sounds amazing. And then as far as, I mean, you're saying that life in Chile is pretty good at the moment. Any sort of long-term plans to head away from there, or is that home for now?
It's home for now. I'd like to see, when I left my job last year, my idea was to take some time to improve on my running and to try and make some connections and meet people in the running industry and see where that could take me, because running and trail running is my passion. So if any opportunities come up for me to train and race in other places or to work in the running industry, I'll look at those very carefully and take them up. But for the time being, Chile is home.
Chile is home. It sounds amazing. Daniel, and then you're online, you're on Twitter. But, I mean, if people want to follow your journey, they can obviously follow you on Twitter. What I'll do is I'll pop your Twitter handle up on our website as well. But do you blog at all, or do you sort of have an online presence where people can actually track you and see what you're up to?
Yes, I have a blog. It's www.dwroland.com. And I put up my training, what I'm doing, some tips and advices about desert races, and also some quite in-depth race reviews. So if anyone is interested in, for example, running the Atacama Crossing, they might want to look through that and see some of the photos and read some of the descriptions about the terrain and things like that.
Sounds brilliant. Daniel, I'll pop those details up on our website as well. And yeah, I want to wish you all the best. Hope your training goes well and hopefully we can catch up when you are back in SA.
That sounds fantastic. I really like that, Brad. Thank you.
Awesome. Daniel, thank you. All the best and we'll definitely chat soon. Well, it's off to the friendly city right now, Port Elizabeth, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto Trail Talk SA this week, Sean O'Keefe. Sean, welcome onto the show. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, morning. Thanks for having me.
Sean, before I start telling you, let me just give a bit of background to our listeners and why I wanted to chat to you. There's a major, major problem when it comes to rhino poaching here in SA. You sort of came across something through someone you know in PE over a year ago. It struck a nerve, and you've decided to try and do your little bit to help when it comes to stopping rhino poaching. You're putting on an annual event now called the Rhino Run. Sean, tell us a little bit about how it came about. This the second running is coming up, and we'll get into that in a bit more detail shortly. But tell me how the original Rhino Run came about.
Okay. The original Rhino Run was inspired by a poaching incident that happened at the Kirikha Game Reserve, which is close to Kenton on Sea, just down just up the coast from where we stay here in PE. A vet that was treating two rhinos that survived the poaching attempt, Dr. Will Fowles, released a video clip of how he found these animals. They were still tranquilized. They had half of their faces basically hacked off by the poachers. And the video clips were basically him giving the animals the antidote. And when I saw these animals come around and realized that half of their faces had literally been hacked off with a machete, it kind of struck a nerve with me. And I decided, look, you know, I can't sit around on the sidelines anymore. What can I do? And being a trail runner, all the people that I've met through the sport of trail running are all sort of conservationists at heart. And I decided, well, cool, let's see if we can wangle a rhino run. And I spoke to a couple of people that I've met through the scene. I spoke to the editor of Go Trail magazine, James Hallett, asked him if he would give me a bit of backup on it. And we ended up putting it together. Last year, we ended up with 5 rhino runs around the country. And through the initiative, we ended up raising 130,000 rand to help in the war on rhino poaching.
See, that's amazing how just one little incident like that can sort of inspire someone to do something that big. I mean, five runs, it's no sort of small feat to put something like that on. It's also a lot of money that you guys have raised. But the second edition is coming up soon. Tell us a little bit about the run itself, or the runs, I should say, because there are more than one.
The runs. Yeah.
And how people absolutely can get involved.
Absolutely. Okay, cool. This year we've kind of expanded it to 7 different locations around South Africa. So we're hosting rhino runs in Cape Town, Port Elizabeth, Kenton-on-Sea, East London, Durban, Gauteng, and Bloemfontein. People can enter online by just going to www.rhinorun.co.za. Our online entry system closes on Friday this week. Anybody that enters online will get a Rhino Run goodie bag. They will also stand a chance to win a weekend away for two people at the Kareka Game Reserve, and possibly stand a chance of actually meeting Tandy, one of the runners that survived the poaching attempt. We also have one or two other lucky draw prizes. There will be lucky draw prizes at each of the different events as well. I must say that, although I came up with the concept, I couldn't do it without the support of the different race organizers around the country that have stepped on board to help me pull this thing together. You know, these guys are volunteering their time, their infrastructure, they're spending their time donating it to get out on the trails, find routes for guys to come and run at. So a big shout out has to go to the Riverside Trail Club in Durban. They've been helping us. They did it last year and are helping us this year. Pure Adventures in Bloemfontein, who are helping us do the inaugural one in Bloem this year. Race Time, who are doing the Gauteng Rhino Run. Our company here in Port Elizabeth, which is Free Spirit Adventures, we're handling the Kenton and Port Elizabeth events. Backyard Adventures are in East London. And Quantum Adventures are handling the Cape Town events. So the events have been put on by guys that really know what they're doing. They host amazing runs all through the year. And this is just their chance for them to also try and help give back on this, and help us fight in this war on poaching.
Yeah, and you mentioned all of those partners that help you put those races on, but the one website to remember is rhinorun.co.za. You can get all the info there. Sean, what I'll do as well is I'll pop that link onto our website too in the show notes for this episode of Trail Talk SA. So if people are listening to this, they can just go to Trail Talk SA. The link will be there. They can click straight through and find that out as well. The run itself, or the runs themselves, happening on the 22nd of September, which is World Rhino Day as well, I see.
That's correct. Yeah, this is the last year that we're going to actually be able to host it on World Rhino Day, because after this, I think the actual date then starts moving onto a weekday. So for the next sort of 4 or 5 years, I don't think we'll be able to actually host it on the day directly. So yeah, 22nd of September is the date. It's a Sunday, so you should have no kiddie problems with school sports and that sort of thing. The runs are designed to accommodate walkers as well as runners. We have different distances at each of the events. Basically a 6K, which will be a run or a walk, a 12K, which is kind of like an intermediate trail run, and then a 20K, which is for the more serious, dedicated trail runners that want to get out there and suffer a little bit in the bush.
I love it. And then, Sean, tell us just a little bit about the funds that you guys are raising. Obviously, the proceeds from these events go towards the fight against rhino poaching. Who are the sort of organizations that you support?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. We have one anchor beneficiary that will always be a 20% beneficiary of the Rhino Run going forward. And this is a fund called the Rhino Injection Fund that was started by Will Fowle, the vet. A portion of the funds go through to his fund. And then the balance is going to be split between two other operations. The one is called OSCAP, which is Outrage South African Citizens Against Poaching. They're involved on the ground with a number of rhino projects, like the Rhino Orphanage, the Rhino Rescue Project, which is the horn poisoning treatment. They have a tracker dog program that they're very actively involved with, training the dogs to sniff out rhino horns at the airports and customs locations, how to track poachers in the bush and so on. And then the other beneficiary is the Chip and Bearer Rhino Foundation. Chip and Bearer are also very much hands-on. They develop tracking systems so that rhino owners can actually track their animals through the bush and keep tabs on where they are. And they're also quite active in terms of equipping anti-poaching units and helping to train anti-poaching units on the ground with weapons and gear like infrared scopes and night vision and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean it's such a scourge of our society at the moment. It's horrible that it's happening, but it's awesome that you guys are trying to do something. And I mean, I'm just looking at the stats on your website now. I mean, in 2013, we've lost 621 rhinos already. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
No, it's unbelievable. I mean, if we don't get a grip on this, sooner or later, if we keep getting poached at this kind of rate, the rhinos are going to go into a birth decline sometime within the next 5 to 10 years. In other words, we're going to have more of them getting killed than of getting born, and then we've got a problem. Then we've got a really serious problem, because an animal is back onto a seriously endangered route.
Yeah, it's not good at all. So the run's happening 22nd of September. Sean, you mentioned that your online entries close this coming Friday. I'm just trying to work the date out. That's the 14th, right?
That's the 13th. It's the 13th. Yeah, Friday the 13th at midnight. That's just, we have to close the pre-entries up to give us a chance to pack all the goodie bags and then ship them around the country on time for the run the following weekend. So, okay.
So just a few more days. Are you taking, you're not taking any late entries on the day at any of the events?
We will be taking late entries on the day at some of the events. The details are actually on the website, okay. But we are encouraging guys to please register online if possible. It helps with the logistics on the day. It helps us to make sure that everybody gets processed on time, that the runs can start on time, and that everything runs smoothly. Also, if they do pre-enter, then they will be getting a runner run goodie bag with a couple of extra goodies thrown in on that as well.
Yeah, it's. I agree with you. I mean, the pre-entry is the way to go. At least as a race organizer, you know exactly how many people you're catering for, and you can put on a great experience for the runners. It's so difficult to put on a world-class event not knowing how many people are coming. So, yeah, I would urge people as well to pre-enter, not even just for this race, but if you do have an opportunity to pre-enter, definitely do it. It just makes life easier for everyone involved. Sean O'Keefe, thank you so much for chatting to us today. We really do appreciate it. I'd love to catch up perhaps afterwards just to find out how it did go. And I also just for interest's sake, I don't know, it's probably last minute now, but moving ahead in the future, you've got a link on your website that says find out more about how to organize your own. So perhaps somebody sitting in another center that's not catered for as far as the Rhino Run goes, perhaps they're sitting in Kimberley or somewhere else and they want to put on their own Rhino Run, how can they go about doing that?
Well, basically, the idea with that was we have the official Rhino Runs happening here in South Africa. Our idea was to try and spread the word about this as far and wide as possible. So we're encouraging people, if they're overseas and they want to just kind of run in solidarity with a country full of trail runners that are out there doing their thing for the rhinos, that they just get their friends together on their favorite trail. If they can, make a small donation towards a fundraising effort and then send us a photograph of them running on the day. They'll be doing so knowing that they're running with an entire country full of trail runners that are doing exactly the same thing.
There you go. I think that's pretty cool. We've got quite a few listeners around the world as well. So, yeah, let me put that challenge out there from a Trail Talk SA perspective too. This week on the show, we chatted to Daniel Rowland, who's in Chile. He won the Atacama Crossing. So, Daniel, I know you're listening to this. Come on and get a couple of your buddies in Chile to do the same for the guys here in South Africa.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, there we go. Sean, you guys are also on Twitter and Facebook. I'll pop those links up on our website too. So if people want to get in touch through social media, they can do exactly the same. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put that link to that video as well. It is disgusting. that's the only word I can think of. I'm going to put that link up, and there is a bit of a warning that it is graphic, and if you are sort of that way inclined, don't watch it because it will upset you. But that's exactly maybe what we need people to see is what these barbarians are doing to our rhinos.
That's exactly it. That video inspired me to come up with this event, and hopefully if anybody else watches it, it'll inspire them to get out and support this event to help us fight this war, because without the support, we're going to lose it.
Yeah, exactly. Sean O'Keefe, thank you so much for chatting to us here on Trail Talk SA today. I really appreciate it, and all the best for the race that's happening on the 22nd.
Awesome, and thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Trail Talk SA, and we're talking injuries here on the show today, and it's a pleasure to welcome onto the show Chris Allen, who's a physiotherapist at the Velocity Sports Lab down in Cape Town. Not only is he a physio, but also an avid runner and trail runner. Chris, welcome onto the show. Thanks for taking the time to chat to us today.
Yeah, thanks, Brett. Thanks for having me along.
Chris, I wanted to chat just a little bit about injuries as far as trail running goes, and you're in the process of doing your masters on knee injuries in particular, and that's what I wanted to chat about. Trail running, a lot of people are scared of trail running for that fact that it just almost comes across as that it's really easy to twist an ankle or sprain a knee or something like that. In your experience, I mean, what are the most common injuries that you're seeing in your practice from a trail running perspective?
You get to break injuries up into a chronic type of injury or an acute injury. The acute ones are the ankle sprains and the knee sprains, and yes, in trail running, they're most probably a little bit more prevalent than on the road. But the chronic injuries are the same as in the road running. The guys going out, doing too much, too soon, too fast, without enough rest. So that type of injury is exactly the same in trail running as in road running. And in trail running, the acute injuries, you see the occasional more ankle sprains than knee sprains, I would say.
Chris, can I ask a question? This is coming just from a layman sort of perspective. What's more common, the acute one where somebody sprained an ankle or sprained a knee, or the things where people are doing things like an ITB or that sort of thing, where it's almost self-inflicted?
Yeah, more the self-inflicted, the chronic ones. They're just going out doing too much. You know, they're enjoying being out there so much, and they're feeling good, and they're just going out and doing too much or too far and coming up with the ITBs, which is the classic, yeah.
I'm actually so glad I asked that question, because that is such a runner's thing, that it's people are scared of running trail because they think they're going to do some serious damage, but 9 times out of 10, it's you as a runner who ends up doing the damage.
Oh, 100%, you know, and also... I suppose the acute injuries can be also, the guys are just getting too excited. They're going out, they're running very technical single track, where they really should build up into that specificity over time, you know. Start on the jeep tracks, build up slowly, then do a nice simple hiking trails, and then start getting up onto the more technical stuff. The guys are getting injured because they're hitting the technical stuff because that's the fun stuff. They don't have the coordination, they don't have the proprioception and the balance, and they're going over on their ankles.
Yeah, and that's important because that comes with time and experience. The more you do it, yeah. Obviously the better you get at it. Let's talk about some of the acute, like the ITBs and that sort of thing, especially around the knee. Sort of what are the causes of something like that? You've mentioned overuse and just sort of going out and doing too much too soon. But sort of are there any other causes that bring it on, and how can we avoid them?
You know, I'm of the opinion that even if you've got poor biomechanics, if you have got poor biomechanics, but you follow a good training program, building up slowly, and not overloading those structures, you can still run without getting that injury. So the biggest problem is the training. You know, these guys are just going out with poor biomechanics, even with perfect biomechanics, and they're just doing too much, too soon, you know. So if they build up very slowly, the tissues in the body naturally strengthen up and are able to resist injury a lot easier. So the biggest problem is actually just the training. They're just going out too fast, too soon, and not recovering between runs.
I'm actually so glad you mentioned the biomechanics side of it, because I'm probably a good example of that. I pronate like so badly. If you see me running, you must think, how can this guy run? But yeah. I've managed to avoid injury because when I started running, I was a really big guy. I had to start really slowly and build up slowly. And my body's obviously adapted to that and has come to terms with it now. And I mean, I can run no hassle. That's great advice. And then I just also wanted to ask, with regards to like an injury like ITB, a lot of times people, you hear it, but you've never had it. What are the symptoms? What do you look out for when it comes to ITB?
Well, actually, people classically get pain on the outside of the knee, so on the lateral side of the knee. They get a lot of pain when they're running downhill mostly. And ITB, it kind of comes on at a specific distance into a run. So you'll be running and maybe around about 4 to 5 Ks, you'll start getting this lateral knee pain, worse on the downhill, and it'll just get worse and worse and worse. And every time you go for a run, it's almost like clockwork. It always comes in at around about the same sort of time every single time you run. And it can get so bad that you actually can't run anymore.
And as far as treatment goes, you say 4 to 5 Ks. Is it best to like keep running below the pain and slowly trying to increase that, or do you need to really seek treatment and get it sorted out?
Yeah, you see, with me being a runner, I'm quite an aggressive physio, and I kind of try and get my patients to carry on running. But as you say, below the pain. So we say, okay, you're getting the pain at 5 Ks. Let's just do 4 Ks. Keep it flat. Keep it simple. While you're doing the rehab, which is very important, you know, strengthening up your core, strengthening up your hip stabilizing muscles, and then rolling that ITB out on a roller, and then doing the anti-inflammatory treatments around actually where the inflammation is in that lateral surface of the knee.
Yeah, you also mentioned the strengthening of the core. A lot of times people, you get a knee injury, like an ITB, and people think that's the injury, but... And that's the cause of it or whatever. But there's often a weakness somewhere in your core, perhaps it's glutes or that sort of thing, that's actually causing an imbalance, and that's what's causing the injury. Am I correct in saying that?
100%. So the body functions all in balance. So structures need to be the same sort of tightness on either side of the joint, so they need to work on either side of the joint, the same kind of flexibility, as well as in strength, you know. So your joints need to be able to be controlled both as far as flexibility and strength goes. Right from your core, which is like your foundation for your lower limb, your hip, which is the next level of the foundation, and then onto your knee. So a lot of injuries we're finding, especially with patellofemoral pain and ITB, the problem is not centered around the knee. That's where the symptoms arise. That's actually centered around the core and the hip.
Yeah, and runners are notoriously bad at at sort of strengthening and stretching and that sort of
thing. No, we just want to go out and run, you know. We want to be out on the road or in the mountains. We don't want to sit there and do ball exercises and Pilates and things like that. So, unfortunately, we pay the price.
Yeah, without a doubt. And then, Chris, you mentioned the foam roller. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, I don't know anything about it, but I've heard tons of people talking about getting on the foam roller. What does it do? How does it work?
You know, there's this whole thing about flexibility and stretching muscles, and there's this move at the moment to, rather than trying to just stretch a muscle, to try and improve the mobility of the muscle, so it's flexibility as well, by rather massaging it, doing fascial releases, that sort of thing on the muscle, releasing the muscle in that way. And the foam roller is a great way of doing it. So it's basically just a big foam roller. It's quite hard, and you can lie on top of it and move your body up and down. It's like you're taking a rolling pin to your leg. And you can work out any of your tight spots, any of your fascial restrictions. So your quadriceps, your ITB, your hamstring, anything that's tight, you can just roll out. And if you're doing that on a regular basis, you're keeping your whole fascia, your fascia moving properly, you're able to run a lot smoother, and your flexibility will be that much better.
Sounds painful.
It is. Unfortunately, it is, especially when you start out. But if you're consistent with it over a period of time, you know, if you've been doing it every single day for a couple of weeks, then it's actually quite nice, you know. Runners kind of like pain as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that we are sadists, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. So we feel that if it's not hurting, then it's not working. So
yeah. And you know, one of my favorites is too, I mean, you talk about pain and we like pain. Often a runner will pick up an injury and they'll go, oh, I'm a bit sore, but I'm going to take it out for a run and see if it gets any better. And so often it doesn't get better. It's best to sort of seek treatment and get some rehab and rather sort it out sooner rather than later before you end up with something major.
Yeah, so with my patients, I really try and hammer that home, and with the Hyper Harriers, which is the club that I run with, you know, I really try and hammer that home is that if they get a niggle and it's consistent for more than just two runs, rather come see me then, because then we can fix you normally within two or three sessions and you're back on the road and you haven't missed any major training. But what most runners do is, as you say, you keep running on it, seeing how it's going, it gets worse and worse, you normally develop a secondary injury, and then they come see me, then we have to take you off running, and then it can take a long time to fix you. So maybe the take-home message from this interview and what I really like to try and pass on to my patients is, if you get a niggle, get it sorted out first, quickly, either by a physio or go for a deep tissue massage or something like that. Get it sorted out quickly, and it could be a lot more cost-effective, and you won't lose out on your training.
Without a doubt. Chris Allen, if people want to get a hold of you down at Velocity Sports Lab, what's the easiest way to get in touch?
They can either email me on chris@velocitysportslab.co.za, or they can contact me on the landline here, is 021-791-7608.
Awesome stuff. Chris, I'll add those details to the show notes for this episode as well. So if people want to, they can just go to Trail Talk SA, head to the show notes for this program, and everything will be there. Chris, thanks for your time. Really do appreciate it. It's been very enlightening, and it's hopefully we can chat soon.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Brad. It was great.
There we go, done and dusted, another episode of Trail Talk SA. I hope you enjoyed the show as much as I enjoyed putting them together for you. This one in particular, really, really enjoyed it. So awesome chat with Daniel, looking forward to catching up with him when he's back in SA in a month or so's time from now. And yeah, don't forget to be in touch if you'd like to. You can pop me an email, podcast@trailtalksa. If you've got any events or perhaps there's something that you'd like us to know about, you can pop us an email to that email address, podcast@trailtalksa.co.za. You can also tweet us @trailtalksa or find us on Facebook. facebook.com/trailtalksa is where we are on the big Facebook. Would love to hear from you. Let us know where you are, where you listen to the show, if you listen to it while training, or I'm always fascinated to hear where people listen to the show. So let me know. Pop us a tweet. It'll be very, very interesting to find out. And also, if you wouldn't mind, I ask every week, if you do download this podcast through iTunes, if you wouldn't mind just taking just a couple of minutes and leaving us a star review. And if you've got a few more minutes, just if you wouldn't mind typing up a review, let us know what you think of the show. It just helps other people find the podcast on iTunes, and it helps me spread the word about the sport that we all love so much. If you wouldn't mind doing that, I would really, really appreciate it. So from myself, Brad Brown, until next week, have yourself a great one, and we'll chat soon. Cheers.